Hey, this is Jordan Page, and you're tuned into Radio Free Readout.
Segment 4 is brought to you by AMP 3, Austere Medical and Practical Preparedness Project. They build and sell medical and specialty gear for the prepared citizen. I want to remind you guys that they're going to be in several expos in June, from Seaside, Oregon, Pomona, California, and Chattanooga, Tennessee. They are going to be in those locations. So go and go to their website, amp-3.net. And they've got their whole schedule there, and they've got openings for their wound care suture technique class in Chattanooga and in Pomona. Those are coming up. So check the dates, check those out, and tell them I said hi when you stop in and see when you see Dave and Beth there. Great. That was a great resource. Okay, let's talk about committees real quick, because I want to get these guys on the line. I got six people standing by. There are a lot of resources out there, from Wikipedia to, you know, all kinds of stuff out there. We've been really researching this for a while. Well, some other peoples have as well. These Committees of Correspondence of the American Revolution is a book that I purchased by Edward Day Collins. Now, this is from Volume 1 from the Annual Report of the American Historical Association for 1901. Now, this is from the government printing office of, 1902. Okay, so I have a PDF version of this because it's open source, is public domain now. And I'm going to write an article about the committees, and I'm going to post that and make that PDF available to all of you. But I also like a book in my hand, and I don't know why. I'm just old-fashioned that way. So I went and bought this. Amazon, about Committees of Correspondence of the American Revolution by Edward Day Collins. And so I've been studying this among several other materials. And something that, why is this necessary? The conditions are optimum for the resurgence of these committees, these historical committees. When these, our founders were faced with tyranny and injustice by the British. So I want to read something to you from this that really jumped out. It really explains what these committees were originally intended for. And this says this on it's on page 1 in this book, but it says page 245 because it's from this annual report. It says, hence, the primary movement was to bring the people to understand their interests and act in concert. And the first means used to attain this end was the establishment of committees of correspondence in different parts of the country. These committees were chosen in parishes, districts, or smaller neighborhoods. And of course, today that would be county and town level. So necessary was this system in itself, and so well adapted to promote the general welfare, that it was acceded to everywhere, and in short time, committees were so universally appointed throughout the colonies that the Friends of Liberty had speedy and direct channels opened with each other in every part of the continent. This increased their mutual intelligence, it gave them confidence and encouragement, harmonized their sentiments, and sowed the seeds of union. Are we in need of that now, patriots? Do we need to increase our mutual intelligence? Do we need some confidence and encouragement? Do we need something to harmonize our sentiments and sow the seeds of union and unity among the patriots? You better believe it. The time is right for this. Now, this also goes on to say on the next page, here were local groups widely separated. Sound familiar? All these little pockets of patriots separated from one another. Unity of purpose might be affirmed among them, but it could not be carried to fruition without correspondence and cooperative effort by sympathetic nuclei in the individual colonies. The momentum this becomes apparent, examples of corresponding committees abound. The moment this becomes apparent, examples of corresponding committees abound. And this is apparent to us even today. And that's why these groups, these 2.0, founders 2.0, these committees, these assemblies are beginning to form. Among the religiously inclined, it appeared in a desire of communication between the churches. Merchants saw this method a weapon for securing release from certain restrictive laws of trade. So you have the legislative body, you have the religious or the clergy, and then you have the merchants, your economic businessman base, those three things. And then, of course, the people supporting all of that. Good cross-section. And, of course, there's also committees of safety, which we're going to learn more about, because we're going to be talking about this in little bite-sized pieces through the summer and from here on out. Well, we're joined by some members of the Committee of Safety from Central Washington. This is a very strategic move to start to consolidate the efforts of conservative, like-minded patriot, especially Christian patriot leadership and people in the community that are going to be working together. Now, this is happening already all across the American Redoubt. But the problem that we've seen is that these little groups are isolated from one another. And that's something that we're going to be overcoming a number of different methods and means, including AMRON, the American Redoubt Radio Operators Network. But all of these conservative pockets all over the place are fighting for Americanism and self-sufficiency within their communities. But there's no coordinated effort. And so we're going to start overcoming that. Now, we're joined in this segment by one of the committees of safety in Washington State that is actually already established, and they are working within their community. And we're doing this a little bit backwards because we were going to have Sharam Hadian on first to lay out the strategic perspective of this. Like I say, that 30,000 foot view, looking down on what committees are and assemblies. But he's on the road. We're not able to get him on in this segment. He's going to be coming on in the next segment. So I just want to welcome all of you, the committees of safety there in Central Washington. We're joined by at least six of you that are on the committee. So, guys, thanks so much for taking the time to be with us here and share your perspective with the listeners on Radio Free Readout.
Thanks for having us.
Okay, now we are dealing with six. There's six people here now, and actually, this is a first. I think this is the first time we've ever had an interview with six people. But now, who just spoke? That was Eric.
Yes, this is Eric.
Okay, Eric is the chairman of the Committee of Safety in your area. And how? What is your area? What is this county, city, or how does that work?
We're part of two counties, and the reason we're two counties is our geographic location basically splits us down the middle, and it doesn't make sense to look out into the whole county because it's a large county. So it just works out really well where we're at, so we've established this in basically two counties.
Okay. Now, you chose to call yourselves a Committee of Safety. Now, we've been doing, you know, a lot of research and looking at the implementation of this, because we have several groups. They all call themselves something. But what we need to do is standardize things. And so we have a historical precedence to follow by godly men, patriots, who follow this model successfully through assemblies, which had committees of correspondence and then committees of safety underneath them. So what makes yours a Committee of Safety?
I think by default, we went with Committee of Safety. We could call it Committee of the Whole, which would encompass everything. I believe it came from the first time we heard it in basically Sharam's presentation. He talks a lot about Committees of Safety, and so we just kind of defaulted to that, to the Committee of Safety.
Okay, so what do you see as your role in as the Committee of Safety? What is your role as a Committee of Safety, and how did you guys come to this?
Well, we started out as a group of 12 men who established the steering committee, and we set up some goals, basically to establish the committee in our area and have it represent two counties. And then we put a mission together and a focus together. And our mission was to establish a grassroots group of like-minded men and women under the laws of nature and nature's God to effect positive change in our local communities, to offer each other our knowledge, abilities, and talents. And then we, in turn, wrote a focus that says God, family, culture, founding documents, preparedness, communication, mentoring, entrepreneurship, benevolence, and finally security.
Hmm. Okay. And all of that is kind of encapsulated within this Committee of Safety.
Yeah, that's essentially our mission statement.
Okay. We'll get into a little bit of the details about exactly what the different roles are, or how you're implementing each one of those different components, because you just basically conveyed what's in your mission statement, right? This is what kind of helps keep you within the guardrails.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
And then we operate with a compact and a set of bylaws as well.
Oh, good. Now, and of course, everybody who a compact, that implies that everybody has to be in agreement there, that you will follow this certain, it's not just a club where, you know, where anybody can just join up, and because it sounds cool, I mean, you have to commit to this.
Yes, absolutely. And okay, that makes us, historically, the compact, from what we can, from our research and whatnot, it is, basically makes us a legal civil body politic.
Hmm. Okay. Legal civil body politic. That implies that you are representatives of the people, or you're voted on by the people in your community?
No, it has nothing to do with politics in the tradition, in the sense of
modern sense of the word.
In the modern sense of the word, but it goes back to we're a group of individuals that have pledged to each other. Are basically our talents, and ultimately our I hope not, but our lives, honor and sacred fortunes. If the time comes that has to happen.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, there's a lot of people that are committed to that, to laying it all on the line: their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor. Like you just said, and there are a lot of grassroots organizations out there. So what sets this apart, and why is, you guys obviously believe this is a viable solution for dealing with the agenda that we're faced against, that we have up against us, that we're facing. So what sets this apart? Why not join another grassroots movement? Because there are several others. What makes this so distinct?
I think Fred can answer that the best.
Okay. And Fred, Fred, you're in charge of, on this committee, you're in charge of records and, was it medical support for self-reliance?
Correct.
Okay. Super. Oh, so Fred, could you speak to that then?
Well, as a civil body politic, one of those things is that we have to be able to speak into the lives of the community we're serving. And if something was to happen, we have to have already earned the right to step in and assist in leading our community through a catastrophe, an issue that may be going on, and support those public servants that are here that are following the Constitution. And so we have established that civil body politic portion, and by doing so, everybody signs a compact based on the county that they vote in, And right now we currently actually have people in three counties that attend our meeting, but primarily we have two counties represented. And we have representatives that go on to more of a state-level group, too. So really the group works toward the acknowledgement that our community is very, very important, and we need to be a part of the community, and we're not a fringe area group.
Yes.
And it's been very, very fortunate for us because of some of the activities that we've recently been able to do and been able to partner with some very core pieces of our community. And we just don't see what some groups that don't establish themselves as a civil body politic see, where they're out there as a club or a militia or a whatever. We're really working toward being the leaders of the community. There's a lot of the active leaders in our community that are involved with us. Mm-hmm. And so there's not going to be a vacuum if there was something to happen and there was a need for leadership. The leadership is already acknowledged, and the community sees these folks on this committee as current leaders in our community, and that they don't have, we don't have an ulterior motive to do anything to usurp the current leadership. We're there for support as long as the current leadership is abiding by the Constitution.
Yes.
And not restricting the established residents of our community from doing what their God-given natural duties and abilities are.
Well, the way that I see it is that these committees need to be made up of elected officials, clergy, and businessmen who are active in the community, who share the same values, those Judeo-Christian, those American ideals, conservative patriots, so that in some type of a collapse, you're going to have people with a globalist vision try to take control and say, okay, we're in charge now. Just follow us, trust us, everything will be okay. And so these committees are in place for when those who are trying to assert one direction on us comes into conflict with Americanism. And so we need to identify and get behind now those leaders in our community who will take us in an American agenda alternative. And when there will be a conflict. And so when they're looking to see who we're going to follow, when the populace is confused, there needs to be leadership in place that has an alternative solution to the globalist solution to the problem. And all of the people that are backing those leaders are very involved in the community. And what I see, because I got to speak with several of you, I think all of you, when we were in Prosser at that at the expo, and what I understood and walked away with was that you guys are so involved in the community on so many different levels. With the chambers of commerce, with the hospital, the elected positions in the community, in the business community, that you're not coming from left field out of nowhere where people are saying, who are these people? It's already established who you are, and you've been engaged and involved in the community for a long time, and you're integrated into it.
I think that's been part of the draw, is that people, especially of our ideology, have been frustrated, as we all have, wrongly focused on the national component. And because American culture has become so obsessed with fame and the big man and the big this and the big that, and so we've all been frustrated feeling like, oh, there's nothing we can do. Washington, D.C. is so corrupt,
right,
which has brought us to, after hearing Sharam speak, realizing that really we can only affect change on a local level, And that is where we live and we eat and we breathe. And so why shouldn't we start there? It's only natural. And I think we just had this wrong sort of thinking about how we were going to fix things and change things. And mm-hmm. so we've brought it back down to the level where it belongs, which okay. is in your own backyard.
Can you introduce yourself to the audience? You are?
I'm Eric's wife.
I'm sorry. Say your name again.
Joe.
Okay. All right. You're absolutely right that, some of the biggest problems that we're faced with are driven from a national level. So we can't ignore it. But like you said, we can't fix that on a national level.
And well, that animal has become so large and out of control. And all of those people there come from somewhere. They come from smaller communities.
Yeah.
And we're sending people there from whoever you are, wherever you're at. Those people come from your community. And some they get dragged astray once they get there. And we just have to start electing people who are no longer going to be taken astray, people who are firm in their values and understand what it is they're facing. And we really can only affect that on a local level. I do agree we can't ignore it, but I don't really believe that sitting here wringing my hands and worrying about it from here, I can do anything. I can only do what I can do here and send the people there that I know are going to stand up for what we believe in.
Yeah. Well, we do our level best. We have, a depraved electorate that unfortunately we're outnumbered on that national level. And that's why I think it's so important that in the conservative regions, conservative pockets, that we really strengthen and shore those communities and states and counties up and strengthen those, become self-reliant and really become active among the patriots, wake people up, which you guys are doing, which we're all doing. And as people wake up, give them something to do. And
yeah, absolutely. You have to give people something to do. Yeah. And it's nice to be able to start with your own immediate neighborhood and just start to educate and help the people who are your neighbors. Your neighbors to the left, to the right, or across the street. You have to start there. And you can't just take on the whole town or city or county and think you're going to change it at once. You have to start with your immediate neighbors.
One of the big things at the expo, John, that we saw was the extreme hunger for knowledge about being able to take care of oneself and their family. Yeah. And we really saw that in our vendors that were at the expo. They expressed that deeply, that people really wanted knowledge. And another thing that the committee is there for is really for restoration. If something was to break down, we want to restore our community back to what it needs to be and what it should be, and not take it down a path of the globalist vision. We want to get back to the Constitution,
That's,
we really believe that.
That's the primary. That's the secondary mission. The primary mission is to just shore up our conservative values here, and protect our heritage. Secondly, if a collapse happens, which all analysts and the history books and all other indicators are showing that we're being lied to, that there will be a collapse, that it can't be avoided. So how do we respond to that? And this is very proactive. This is proactively engaging the community to help them become more self-reliant and identifying those key people that will be critical in the rebuilding process. And that's what I see you guys doing.
John, my name's Kurt, and I'm a minister here in the Valley. I wanted to share with you why I got involved with the group. When I first heard of the group, I was interested in it mostly because of the fact that, like, as you're saying and as has already been mentioned, a need for sustainability, emergency care, things that might happen that out of our control. But deeper than that, what really struck me and what brought me into this was that I saw that we can't change things from the top down, as was mentioned, so it has to start from the bottom up.
Yes.
Had to start with me personally, then my family, then the church, then the community that I live in, the state that I live in, and then broader than that, seeing the need to start with me personally, changing my mindset, my goals, my ideas, instead of it being selfish, self-centered goals, to look beyond myself and what would make a difference. When I looked at myself, I'm only looking at what I can do, what I want, what I need, or what I think I need. But when I think outside of that and realize that there's more people that are relying on me, then it starts my path down a direction that leads me to want to help the community, to better the community and better my own personal life.
Yeah, well, we always start off with selfish motives, you know, because I want freedom. But really, just like the founder said, what we're doing today will affect generations to come. And when you really start to step back, and God bless you for we need more clergy woken up and speaking the truth to the people as far as what we are truly up against, and getting engaged on this level, because you know, there's many pastors that just don't want to get involved in this level. They don't want to deal with the political realm, or something holds them back. It's maybe just an area of unfamiliarity to them. They don't know how to approach this subject. They don't know what to do with it. Where do I go next? And so we're going to be relying on clergy like you and Chuck Baldwin, working with him. And we're going to be starting to develop relationships with these with the Black Robe Regiment, and get these guys engaged to engage other clergy. And so I thank you for what you're doing. That's just huge. It's a huge critical component to all of this.
Thank you. My pleasure. I'm glad to be involved.
Now, you guys are involved in one committee in one community. Do you feel alone?
I think we did before the expo. You know, there's another committee about 40 miles, 35 miles away.
Yes.
And we've worked with them a little bit. But I think at the expo and meeting you and people who came from other places in the readout, that we're not alone mm-hmm. at all. There just needs to be more committees formed up so that we can start helping each other on a broader geographical area rather than just in our own little community.
Yeah, there needs to be correspondence between them. They need to share, like I said before, they need to share their victories. They need to share strategies. They need to edify one another, and they need to be identifying and then striving toward a common goal. Whether you live in Washington, Idaho, Montana, Wyoming, or Missouri, for that matter, you know, that we need to be able to identify those goals and not be going after those alone. I've seen a lot of I spoke a couple weeks ago to the Tea Party Patriots in Spokane, and I mentioned that I see a lot of discouragement among Patriot leaders because they feel like they're just busting their tails, and they just feel alone and isolated, and nobody else gets it. But this is so encouraging when you see other people that are all in the same fight, and you didn't realize that they were there, that you're not isolated, you're not alone, and you're not crazy, and that they need to start coordinating, they need to start corresponding.
John, we had a meeting back in October of last year where we got together with other groups from around the state, and I had the same feeling going into it that you're talking about, that aloneness, feeling alone, when we met with other groups in the state that had the same ideas, the same goal. I was very encouraged to find that there were so many people. And, of course, we were only meeting with the representatives from each of those groups, but each of the groups similar to ours have that same desire, that same goal of making a difference in our communities. And
yes,
I was very encouraged by that, and I hope that those listening will know that there are more out there than just themselves.
And there will be more on the way. We are going to be going through quite a it's going to be a blinding mission. It's going to be pretty fast paced, and it's already starting to pick up. So you guys aren't alone. And also, you guys have quite a few new Amron operators there. And that's one of the – if conventional communications are disrupted due to a collapse or intentionally disrupted through a presidential directive or some other means – to intentionally cut these patriots off from communicating and corresponding with one another, you guys have a whole group of Amron operators in that area now.
Correct, and we just have two new AM operators that are in our group, and pretty much everybody's on the Baofeng radios, and we're getting those programmed each week, and we'll work on our local net and get that up and running. But you know, and then one of the other things, we're going to get our comms up, but one of the other things that we do at our meetings, John, is that we always have an education piece.
Yes.
And we're really trying to get people back to understanding, you know, how can I be prepared and how do I eat this elephant one bite at a time. And so we've had talks on 72-hour kits, get-home bags, bug-out bags. We've had talks on alternate energy. We've had talks on raising livestock and chickens. We've had talks on water and storage and alternate ways of purifying and how to get it out of the well if you don't have electricity. And so every month we seem to go through an item and touch base on it and kind of get some information out there. We've had storage cellars for fruits and vegetables. We've been able to do a lot of different things, and it's really been nice to be able to share with each other our talents.
Yes.
And be able to bring those along that are just absolutely green, and they're trying to do the things that their grandmother did that we forgot, and their grandfather did.
Yeah.
And we have a whole group of youth that's involved in our core group, and they're there for every meeting. And so it's not just men, it's not just men and wives, and it includes the entire family. And we get together, and it is a family community event.
And you guys are reaching out.
That led also to the meeting that we had here, the expo that we had, where we shared with the community some of the different knowledge and some of the different things that was being shared in our small group. We got to looking at it and saying, you know, there's more than just this group that needs to hear the things that we're learning about, and that led to the expo,
yes,
which was very encouraging.
Yeah, and you guys worked hand in hand with the Chamber of Commerce to get that up and going. You know, it lends a level of legitimacy to this project, and you're gaining recognition within the community as really a service of that's brought to the community by people who really care. They don't have, like you said, an alternative agenda. It really is towards self-sufficiency and patriotism. And you guys, you know, well, you're doing a great job. And we're coming to the end of our time. But, I mean, we could talk because I got to speak with so many of you guys, and I felt like we got robbed because there was so much more to say. But we could go on. I mean, we could go on for another 2 hours about everything that you guys are accomplishing. And I wish we had time to get into everything. But you know what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to schedule follow-ups with you guys. And eat that elephant one bite at a time, and approach. There's so many things in your mission statement: God, family, culture, founding documents. We could just completely—I hate this term—unpack this, but just go through there and just peel each one of those layers off and dissect it and share with other people and other committees and other. Redoubters and patriots that are hungry. The people are hungry. They're saying, tell us what to do. Tell us what's next. How do we do it? And so we're going to have to do that with you guys and just keep revisiting this. You aren't alone. And I know there are other committees that are getting stood up, and definitely many more to follow. And so,
and may I add something to that, John?
Absolutely.
And we've already invented the wheel. So when these other committees are getting set up, a couple hours of consultation, we're more than willing to help out so they don't have to reinvent the wheel.
Yes. And I was speaking to Fred earlier about that when we were setting up the this conference call, that what we want to do is get this dialed in and then duplicate it. Because other people are saying, this sounds great. What do I do? And then we need to have something to hand to them for when they say, what do I do next? What's next? And I'll be working with you guys, you know, very closely over the coming weeks on, you know, getting progress reports from you guys and getting something together that we can take and present to other communities that are looking for something like this. And then, of course, we're going to get into the broader spectrum of committees of correspondence, committees of safety, committees of assemblies, and mm-hmm. you know, things like that. You guys, who holds you accountable?
God.
Well, yeah. that's a better answer than we're going to hear from anybody in Washington D.C. That's one of the things that I know the committees of safety historically have been, they've held the militias accountable. They have held elected officials accountable. And so, you know, sometimes people stop and they say, well, wait, well, they're watching them. Who's watching the watchers, you know? And so I know that's going to be something that people are going to be asking, you know, in the future. What's to keep these guys from becoming tyrants? So they want to step up and say, "Oh, we're going to lead the community in this rebuilding." How do we know we're not going to go through this cycle again,
John? In order for anyone to have the right to lead somebody, you have to have spoken to them in a language that they understand, and you have to earn that right. And I think this committee, that's made up of all the different facets that we have, is working on earning that right, that if we ever have something that the community knows, every one of us, they know what this committee is about. We are very public. We are not shadowy at all, and we're out there to support them and help them in any possible way. So we're working on speaking into their lives so that if something ever did happen, then they can look to us and know exactly who we are and what we stand for.
Good. Good. Proven leaders that have already, you know, have a track record, clergy, businessmen, and elected officials. You've already been chosen by the community. So I want to thank you guys all for your time. Is there anything you want to just add that you want the listeners to walk away from before we go into the break?
I've got one thing. In a song from a choir that I'm in recently. And
is this Kurt?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
The words say, "Oh, may all who come behind us find us faithful. May the fire of our devotion light their way. May the footprints that we leave lead them to believe, and the lives that we live inspire them to obey. Oh, may all who come behind us find us faithful." And it says, "After all our hopes and dreams have come and gone, and our children sift through all that we've left behind, may the clues that they discover and the memories that they uncover become the light that leads them to the road we each must find." And that's my goal in this group, and I think everybody else's, is the idea that we want our children to have a life and a hope beyond what the global mentality is.
Amen. It's not going to come without a fight, that's for sure. So I thank you guys all for what you're doing. Just God bless you all. And Godspeed to you, and we will definitely be in touch.
And thank you, John, for what you do, and God bless.
Thank Amen. You very much. From the Committees of Safety in Central Washington, more to come from these guys. We're going to be following up with them. And Sharam Hadian is next. This is Radio Free Redoubt, the voice of the American Redoubt. Stay right there.
If you serve your country, either in law enforcement or in the military, and you are a patriot, love liberty, and want to do your part in preserving what made America great and free, join Oath Keepers today.
Hi, everyone. This is John Jacob Schmidt, here to tell you about the 299 Days book series by lawyer and author Glenn Tate. Follow him through his real-life story of transitioning from middle-aged, unprepared suburbanite to full-blown prepper, tactical team member, and provider and protector of his family. Then let Glenn take you on a wild ride through the collapse, community building, resistance against a corrupt system, and the rebirth of a new one. Go to 299days.com to learn more. Okay, we are joined now by a pastor who is very much involved in the spearheading of what many of you are starting to hear about, these committees. There's historical precedents for these committees. The men who went before us, our founding fathers, formed committees for specific purposes, and that actually led to the birth of our nation. And there is a necessity for something to be done by the Christian patriots. And one of those somethings is the formation of committees. And so I just want to welcome all of you to this segment and just ask that you would welcome the pastor of the Truth and Love Project and also the Truth and Love Christian Fellowship, Sharam Hadian. Sharam, thanks for joining us today on Radio Free Readout.
Oh, John Jacob, it's great to be with you and with all of your listeners.
Now, you and I have met before, and there was just an immediate connection there, and both of us kind of have the same vision. It's like I mentioned a few shows ago, we're starting to meet other Christian patriots that are, we're all on the same road, we're all on the same highway, heading the same direction, but we're just in different lanes.
Right.
And we're starting to meet and connect these dots, and this is really exciting. Now, can you just share a little bit? You have a fascinating testimony, and so just to introduce you to the listeners, just a little bit about your background and what brought you to this point.
Sure. Well, I echo what you said too about I really do believe that this is a divine hand of God that is leading us together and bringing these pieces. But yeah, my story is kind of interesting because I wasn't born here in America. I actually come from Iran originally. I was born there. I left there with my family in 1978, just before the overthrow of the government there, and I witnessed my birth country lose all of its freedoms because Islam came in and set up shop. And so I witnessed that, in my birth country. And so we came to this nation for freedom and for what it represented. But, of course, the greatest freedom came in my life 15 years ago when I became a Christian, became a follower of Jesus Christ. I left Islam, came out of that by God's grace. And, according to the teachings of Islam, became an apostate, one who deserves the death penalty. We see this happening around the world right now in places like Sudan and so forth. But my perspective of looking at our nation was one of freedom, was one of what it afforded. And then now, over the last number of years, I've been a Christian now for 15 years. I've been a pastor now for about almost 13 years. I'm watching America go down this road of losing its freedoms rapidly, just systematically, and it just seems that there is not a fight in us, that there is not enough of God's people that are willing to stand, and that's really my heart and my mission, and that led in my life not just to becoming a pastor. I was a police officer. I ran for office because the Lord had put that on my heart in 2010 and 2012. And all of that, I believe, is preparing us for what is ahead. And that kind of led our journey after, when I ran for governor in the state of Washington in 2012. After that, when we saw the condition of the political environment, the condition of our nation, is when the Lord began to take us on a historical journey, looking at our founding, looking at our forefathers, and saying, look at your history. And there's a verse in the Bible that I love, which is out of Jeremiah 6:16. It says, when they were in trouble, Israel was in trouble, the Lord said to them, see, you stand at a crossroads and you look, ask for the ancient path and walk in it, and you'll find rest for your soul. And I believe that's our calling, is we are to look to our ancient path. What birthed this nation? What birthed the greatest nation on the planet Earth in its history? Yes. And how do we get back there?
That's a difficult task because we have a populace that doesn't care anymore. They're not just stealing our freedom; it's being surrendered by a willing right. people.
Exactly.
Except for a fragment or a remnant that are saying, "No, this is un-American. This is wrong, and we're going down the wrong path."
Absolutely. And real quick, I was going to say, but thank God for a remnant. You know, God always preserves because of a remnant. And that's what really we're working on, John Jacob, is these connections, I believe, are part of that remnant coming together and standing. Because, like you said, we can't control what others are going to do, but we can control what we do and our obedience. I believe the greatest culprit of laying down our freedoms are Christians. It's within the church, our pastors.
Yes.
I'm a pastor, as I said, but we're the greatest culprit of just laying down and doing nothing. I always remind people, if we do nothing in the face of evil, of course, as we know that quote, it is evil itself. And in the way our government is formed here, if we do nothing, we're giving our consent. You know, our government was formed on consent.
Yes.
Well, we're giving our consent if we do nothing. So this is why it's critical that we stand. And we believe that these historical committees that God brought in our view about 2 years ago, are critical because there were, again, our history, and we're seeing a need for them to rise up.
Mm-hmm. I just spoke with six of the members of one of the committees in Central Washington, and mm-hmm. we actually did this, kind of flipped it backwards, because you were on the road and weren't quite available yet. So I wanted to lay the foundation with you first, like I said, kind of get that broad overview perspective, and then go into the actual hands-on. But it's interesting that one of the members was a clergy pastor, I believe it was Kurt, who said that his mission as a pastor is to wake up the church because the pulpit is silent on this.
And that's right.
So that's such a critical component. The way I see it, I see an elected representative, I see the clergy, and then I see the business and economic development ask. Those are the three, kind of the three legs to the stool. And of course, you know, notwithstanding the general populace, the people within the community, but those right. are those three kind of pillars, if you will, that we really need to focus on shoring up and identifying our patriot leaders, bringing them toward a common vision and a common cause. And we've seen these groups, isolated groups, fighting for Americanism in their communities, but they are isolated and they feel isolated. And that's what right. we want to overcome with these committees. So
that's right.
Let's talk about that. You seem to place a lot of emphasis on the committees of safety, where in my research and what I really feel placed on my heart is the committees of correspondence, but really they all work interchangeably. They work together toward a common goal.
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, in forming, because since early 2013, I've been traveling around the state of Washington, I think in 22 or 23 of the 39 counties, sharing the historical vision and what they were and what we're seeing the need for again. But the thing we emphasize is that, because the term Committee of Safety is what most people are kind of familiar with if they research it. If they look online, they'll see Committees of Safety, Committees of Correspondence. But really, what we're trying to establish is that there's what's called a Committee of the Whole. The Committee of the Whole is the people. The founders also use the term assembly. You know,
yes.
First Amendment says we have a right of assembly. So in the Bible, you know, as Christians, we assemble to worship. So that's why we're actually using in our documentation the word assembly, but really that's the Committee of the Whole. That's the people. Now, under that, there are these subcommittees, like the Committee of Safety, Committee of Correspondence. So absolutely, I agree with you. I see them as working together, hand in hand. And really the heart of it is the people. The people have to come together
mm-hmm.
in covenant, by forming really a compact. And I use that word compact very specifically, because go back to our forefathers, the Mayflower Compact,
yes,
the Jamestown Compact. You look at the words of the Declaration when they asserted we are mutually pledging to each other our lives, our fortune, our sacred honor. Isn't that a compact? Isn't that a covenant? So I believe that for us to see any kind of a stance, and then getting through the very difficult days that are ahead. And I was talking about this, John Jacob, on the campaign trail back in 2011, 2012, and people thought I was nuts when I would say things like, we're on the verge of a dictatorship, we need to prepare for difficult days ahead. And they would look at me like, what are you talking about? Now those same people are some of those same people that are in the committees,
yes,
that are saying, you know, we get it now, we get where we're going.
And there is an awakening, and that's what's encouraging, because people are, I hear from people a lot, and I know you do too, where people are frustrated. They're saying, man, nobody's paying attention. They're, Americans are asleep. And it's true by and large. But I would say 3/4 of the people who are actively engaged today were asleep 5 years ago, and people are waking up daily. And our job is to be there for them when they wake up, when they go, oh my gosh, what do I do, to have something to hand to them. This is what you need to do next.
That's right. And the thing that I emphasize within these assemblies or the committees of the whole is, because they're very unique. Historically, as you've talked about on the show, they were very unique because our founders, and most people don't know this, but as they look at the research, all of the delegates that were called to the First Continental Congress of 1774 were all delegates of the committees. They were all elected elected from the ground up, from the local up all the way to the First Continental Congress.
Yes.
Second Continental Congress later in 1775 opens, and of course we know that led to the signing of the Declaration. And your point is well taken too, that most people forget or don't know that 29 of the signers of the Declaration of Independence were pastors,
yes,
were ministers. There would have been no America had there been no Black Robe Regiment pastors who courageously were speaking from the pulpit. They were not afraid to tackle any issue. The Bible talked about it. We're going to talk about it.
Absolutely.
Today we have, unfortunately, in our pulpits, you know, I'm afraid of my 501c3. I'm afraid of offending people. I don't want to, you know, these are political issues. We can't talk about moral things. We can't talk about biblical things because now they're political. And without the clergy, without, as you said, I agree with your three-legged stool there of those three pieces. But I want to just point this one quick thing out, is that what makes the committees historically and today so unique is there's a lot of groups out there, there's a lot of patriots out there who are very concerned and are part of different groups. What makes this very unique is the committees are, it is a provisional civil body politic. Because we come together under a compact, that establishes actual lawful provisional civil body politic. And of course that word you and I talked about is very critical, provisional, meaning that we are preparing something in the event of it being needed.
Yes.
Because we can't wait till all the stuff happens,
no,
and then go, oops, now let's form something, too late, right? So
yeah,
now we're preparing, and we've seen committees on multiple counties here in Washington State form. I'm glad you guys got a chance to talk to the one in the lower valley there, sort of central Washington, and we have other ones, some on the west side of the state, more on the east side of the state.
Yes.
Certainly there's more activity, but we're excited to see this happen in other states as well. We really do believe that this is a movement of God that he's birthing.
Well, I'm really excited about this whole project, and that people are waking up. Matter of fact, you and I and some other individuals will be holding we will be meeting to discuss this, developing this strategy in a way that we can duplicate this and present it to different communities across the American Redoubt and all over the Northwest. To these, there's no shortage of people. Once you explain to them the committees and the assemblies, you don't have to convince them. People are looking for solutions right now, and they're saying, oh my gosh, this is a huge problem. What do we do? Because you're right. You're absolutely right. This has to be proactive. We need to be thinking about our response ahead of time, because the other side is they are planning implement a globalist agenda that is as far from Americanism as you can get. And if we don't have something to offer our communities, then it will be an easy sell, from the globalists, their agenda that they want to assert.
Into tyranny, John Jacob.
Yes.
And again, I just want to remind your listeners one more time. I witnessed this in my birth country. This is exactly what happened in Iran. The people bought the notion that the next thing coming in when there was revolution was going to be better, and they just submitted to it because there was no other option.
Yeah.
And now, 33 years later, my birth country is still under oppressive tyranny, in this case under a theocracy. But so this is why this is so passionate in my heart, too, is that we know, and that's perfect what you said, they're already preparing, we must get ready. And I believe that God is giving us an opportunity to mobilize God-fearing people. And that's the other thing I want to say, is that this has got to be centered by God-fearing people, our pastors,
yes,
our servant elected leaders, like you said, our business community, but God-centered, because unless God is central, it's not going to work.
Mm-mm.
It's just going to fall apart. And that's the other thing we're really focusing on. We're hoping to, like you said, have these meetings. I want to remind your listeners, June 17th, I am going to be out in the Spokane area,
yes,
at an event out there at La Bellevue Center at 7 p.m. June 17th. I'm going to be talking about restoring our republic, and also giving a sort of portion of my talk on these historic committees of safety, what they were. And again, we use the word committee of safety, but really historic assemblies, historic gathering of the people.
Yes.
And then why they're needed again. So they can go to our website, which is TILproject.com. The letters TIL, which stands for Truth and Love, Project.com. Under events, there's a calendar there. They can see it. If they're in the area in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, Spokane area, come please. And we need to mobilize like-minded people who have the right heart and are ready to step up in this hour. And that's what I'm excited about, to partner with you guys as well.
Yeah.
I'm so grateful, John Jacob. I just want to say this. I'm so grateful for what you guys are doing. You guys, the piece that you guys bring, what you've been working on, we were so excited because we had part of the piece. You guys have part of the piece. This is what's amazing, is God is bringing this puzzle together.
Yeah.
And I'm so excited to partner and to work together.
Me too. And I think it would be a really great opportunity for the people in Eastern Washington, Northern Idaho, to be able to make the trip. And I just want to we're going to post this on our highlights and resources page for this episode, episode 14-21. And you'll be able to click right on through, but that'll take you to TIL Project, Truth and Love Project.com. That's 7 p.m. on Tuesday, June 17th, and that's in the Spokane Valley. And I just want to encourage the listeners who are able and who are in the area to be able to attend that in person. And I think what I'm going to try to do too, Sharam, if you don't object, is to either stream that live or record it or both, so that
sure,
we can share that message with other communities. And it might be a great part of the introductory packet, if you will, to give to other community leaders, businessmen, clergy, and elected officials and citizens that are active in their communities that are looking for more information on this and how to go about implementing it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I totally agree with that. And we'll also have part of that packet, the video. We have a video sort of the presentation about the historic committees as well. And so
yes,
all of that we can make available for people, because you said earlier, our heart is that people in different communities, and this actually works best, and you talk to the people out in the lower valley there, this works best in the smallest communities possible. It works wonderfully at the local level, because
yes,
it's the community. Because we have three themes that we're working on on these committees. Number one is building community, a sense of community. Number two is we want to prepare for the difficult days ahead, both through practical preparation, but also in this case through lawful preparation, meaning the provisional civil body politics. And then thirdly, we're also working on trying to bring back our history and restoring our biblical foundation, the Ten Commandments, our Judeo-Christian heritage. So those are kind of our three major focuses.
Yeah.
Well, building community. We need the community. So when you have people that are already building that community, but they're missing those, maybe that other piece about the lawful aspect of standing, that's where we can come in and help them put a packet together and say, here's how you can get this going, because we've already seen it done. We're already well into it, and you can talk to other communities who are willing to help you get your local committee of safety or committee of correspondence up and running.
Yeah, and we really need to edify our leaders, especially, you know, something that one of our listeners and patriots turned me on to that I had never heard of before was, it's called the Doctrine of the Lesser Magistrates. And where we have local county commissioners or sheriffs saying, well, it's the law, you know, Congress passed it, we don't have a choice, when these are ungodly laws or edicts that they feel compelled to enforce. And these are Christians oftentimes and conservatives, but they feel like they have to enforce this global agenda because we have to follow the laws of the land. And
and you're right, and you're absolutely right, and that goes back to that's one of the anchors really within the Declaration of Independence, the idea of that lower magistrate. And that's part of the education process, isn't it, that we're trying to say to our local leaders, the sheriff, the county commissioners, listen, you guys have authority, and we want to stand with you. If you stand with our founding documents, if you stand righteously with God's laws, we want to stand with you, and we want to help empower you. But you said it's almost like they've been neutered, you know, where they don't think they have any power or any authority. Well, we've got to follow orders, and that's part of our education process is look, the lower magistrate has power, especially if the higher magistrate is forfeiting or is demonstrating intolerable tyranny, that we have to be able to then exercise that lower magistrate.
And things have been flipped upside down where they feel like they are accountable to and subservient to a higher level authority, when in fact they're subservient to the people and they're accountable to the people, but that's gotten turned upside down.
Exactly. That's exactly it. And, also in a nation where we have removed the basis of higher law from our land, we've kicked out the Ten Commandments, we've kicked out, now who is that higher authority? it's the globalists. It's those that are in power that simply want to oppress the people, and that's what we're witnessing. And I'm, like you said earlier, I'm grateful that more and more people are beginning to wake up, more realize, you guys aren't kidding. This is really getting to this level, and we're seeing it happen. And also, I've talked about practical examples within, not just if we have governmental type of tyrannical actions, but even if we have some sort of emergency, if we have natural things that happen or an economic collapse, these things, the example has shown us in communities that if we're waiting for government to come to our rescue, good luck, right?
Yeah.
So it's going to be to the community rising up and coming together, dependent on one another, prayerfully dependent on God, and we're going to stand in the hour. And I believe that's the light that we're going to be, is when this darkness is coming and as it's growing, the people who are standing righteously have the opportunity to be the light. And that's the choice we're going to give them, I believe, like you said earlier, is we're going to show people there's another way. You don't have to come under this system. You can come under a good system and be part of the solution rather than part of, the the demise.
Well, yeah, and one other we're at the end of our time, but I just wanted to also just kind of back up what you're saying. The most perfect opportunity to bring in full tyranny is under the auspices of a crisis, some type of yes. catastrophe. And so when they come forward and say, look, this is, and it's always just a temporary solution until we can get things under control. We just temporarily need to, you know, have you turn in all your firearms. We need to relocate this community over here. We have, you know, this nice little relocation camp for you set up, whatever it is. And we need those vetted, strong, patriot Christian leadership, our elected officials, to step up and say, no, that's absolutely wrong. We're not going down that road, to speak up for the people, and knowing that that person is backed up by the people in that community. They didn't have that like in Hurricane Katrina.
They didn't have it in Hurricane Katrina. In fact, John Jacob, as you know, the military was taking away the guns of the lawful citizens,
yes.
while they forgot to disarm the gangs who were setting up little enclaves. And what most people don't know is FEMA actually had a pastor's corps, and the
yes.
pastor's corps, who were trained by FEMA, were going and telling people in the community, hey, government is here to help you. Just submit. And that's what was happening in Katrina. And, of course, we have the history of, you know, world history, you know, within Nazi Germany. I always remind people, look at the example of Austria. Austria, because they were desperate and hungry and unemployed and there was crisis, and they voted Hitler yeah. in.
Yes.
They voted by 98% of the people to allow Hitler to take over. And within years, they were in intolerable tyranny. So
yeah.
that's, you're absolutely right. Crisis is their opportunity, but it's also our opportunity to be a righteous source standing
yes.
for the laws of nature and nature's God, and for the heart of the community. So I look forward to working with you and with all the listeners, and preferably getting to see more people and seeing where we go from here. But thank you so much for highlighting this, for wanting to partner, and I think we have great days ahead of us where we're going to see some pretty amazing miracles.
Yes, sir.
Happen.
We are going to do it with the Lord's help, and it is just it's an amazing thing to be a part of. Lots more information coming for all of you out there who are saying, what's this all about? You know, tell me more. Well, more is on the way, and it's going to be this is a process. So we ask that you be patient, but we're just introducing this to you now. So be ready, because it's going to be coming to a community near you in the American Redoubt somewhere. And I want to just thank so much Sharam Hadian from Truth and Love Project for being with us today. Sharam, it's been a pleasure, always.
It is my pleasure, my honor, and I just thank God for you and for the work you guys are doing, and I thank God for allowing me to be a part of that.
Thank you, sir. Well, God bless, and we look forward to seeing you on the 17th.
You got it.
All right, you have a great evening.
Thank you.
All right, bye now.
There is an exodus happening in America today, from cities full of crime and corruption to the rural areas of clean and sustainable living. Like-minded patriots are coming to North Idaho in search of a simpler, self-reliant lifestyle. I'm Chris Walsh, broker and owner of Revolutionary Realty, based in the heart of America's Great Redoubt, North Idaho. Sometimes God puts you somewhere for a special reason. For me, I believe it's to help like-minded patriots find safety and security for their loved ones. At Revolutionary Realty, we educate buyers about solar power, growing food, obtaining water, and personal security. I became a realtor in 2008 at the bottom of the real estate market, but not the top. I believe that there is a grand plan, and that I'm just a part of it. My job is to help people discover and relocate to America's Great Redoubt. Call a revolutionary today at 208-667-1776 or visit us at revrealty.us to learn more. That's www.revrealty.us, and God bless you.